21st Principle. Strong local self-government is the keystone to preserving human freedom. Political power automatically gravitates toward the center, and the purpose of the Constitution is to prevent that from happening. The centralization of political power always destroys liberty by removing the decision-making function from the people on the local level and transferring it to the officers of the central government. This process gradually benumbs the spirit of voluntarism among the people, and they lose the will to solve their own problems. They also cease to be involved in community affairs. They seek the anonymity of oblivion in the seething crowds of the city, and often degenerate into faceless automatons who have neither a voice nor a vote. The Golden Key to Preserving Freedom. How different from the New England town spirit, where every person had a voice and a vote. How different from the Anglo-Saxon tribal meetings, where the people were considered sovereign and every man took pride in participating. And how different from ancient Israel, where the families of the people were governed in multiples of tens, fifties, hundreds, and thousands, and where problems were solved on the level where those problems originated. All of those societies had strong local self-government. This is what the Founding Fathers considered the golden key to preserving freedom. Jefferson compares New England with Virginia. Thomas Jefferson saw the advantages of the close-knit New England town over the aristocratic rural life of Virginia, said he, quote, "These wards, called townships in New England, are the vital principle of their governments, and have proved themselves the wisest invention ever devised by the wit of man for the perfect exercise of self-government and for its preservation." End of quote. Jefferson was anxious to have all the English colonists in America revive the customs of their Anglo-Saxon ancestors, including strong local self-government. As historian Richard Frothingham points out, quote, "In ancient England, local self-government is found in connection with the political and territorial divisions of tithings, hundreds, burghs, counties, and shires, in which the body of inhabitants had a voice in managing their own affairs. Hence, it was the germinal idea of the Anglo-Saxon polity. In the course of events, the crown deprived the body of the people of this power of local rule, and vested it in a small number of persons in each locality, who were called municipal councils, were clothed with the power of filling vacancies in their number, and were thus self-perpetuating bodies. In this way, the ancient freedom of the municipalities was undermined, and the power of the ruling classes was installed in its place. Such was the nature of the local self-government in England, not merely during the period of the planting of her American colonies, 1607 to 1732, but for a century later. It was a noble form robbed of its life-giving spirit." End of quote. The instinct for self-government survives. Nevertheless, Frothingham points out that these ancient institutions were not entirely forgotten by the people. He quotes the French historian and statesman François Guizot as saying, quote, "When there scarcely remain traces of popular assemblies, the remembrance of them, of the right of freemen to deliberate and transact their business together, resided in the minds of men as a primitive tradition and a thing which might come about again." End of quote. Frothingham says this is exactly what happened as Englishmen pulled away from the mother country and migrated to America. He says that in the colonies, these assemblies reappeared and old rights were again enjoyed, when the immigrants to the new soil, now the United States, began to frame the laws under which they were to live. End of quote. Jefferson emphasizes the role of strong local self-government. As the founders wrote their laws, they were determined to protect the freedom of the individual and provide a vigorous climate of healthy local self-government. Only those things which related to the interest of the entire Commonwealth were to be delegated to the central government. Thomas Jefferson probably said it better than anyone when he wrote, quote, "The way to have good and safe government is not to trust it all to one, but to divide it among the many, distributing to every one exactly the functions he is competent to perform best. Let the national government be entrusted with the defense of the nation and its foreign and federal relations, the state governments with the civil rights, laws, police, and administration of what concerns the state generally, the counties with the local concerns of the counties, and each ward or township direct the interests within itself. It is by dividing and subdividing these republics, from the great national one down through all its subordinations, until it ends in the administration of every man's farm by himself, by placing under every one what his own eye may superintend, that all will be done for the best. What has destroyed liberty and the rights of man in every government which has ever existed under the sun? The generalizing and concentrating all cares and powers into one body, no matter whether of the autocrats of Russia or France, or of the aristocrats of a Venetian Senate." End of quote. Deployment of power between the federal government and the states. James Madison, who is sometimes described as the father of the Constitution, emphasized the necessity to reserve all possible authority in the states and the people. The Constitution delegates to the federal government only that which involves the whole people as a nation. He wrote, quote, "The powers delegated by the proposed Constitution to the federal government are few and defined. Those which are to remain in the state governments are numerous and indefinite. The former, federal powers, will be exercised principally on external objects such as war, peace, negotiation, and foreign commerce. The powers reserved to the several states will extend to all the objects which, in the ordinary course of affairs, concern the lives, liberties, and properties of the people, and the internal order, improvement, and prosperity of the state." End of quote. Federal government to remain relatively small. Thomas Jefferson emphasized that if the oncoming generations perpetuated the constitutional pattern, the federal government would be small and cohesive and would serve as an inexpensive operation because of the limited problems which would be assigned to it. He wrote, quote, "The true theory of our Constitution is surely the wisest and best, that the states are independent as to everything within themselves, and united as to everything respecting foreign nations. Let the general government be reduced to foreign concerns only, and let our affairs be disentangled from those of all other nations, except as to commerce, which the merchants will manage the better, the more they are left free to manage for themselves, and our general government may be reduced to a very simple organization, and a very inexpensive one, a few plain duties to be performed by a few servants." End of quote. A prophecy. One of the greatest American historians of the last generation was John Fiske. He caught the spirit of the founders and studied their writings. He knew the secret to the 5,000-year leap, which was then well on its way. He also saw some dangerous trends away from the founder's basic formula of sound government. He therefore wrote a prophecy which Americans of our own day might ponder with profit. Quote, "If the day should ever arrive, which God forbid, when the people of the different parts of our country shall allow their local affairs to be administered by prefects sent from Washington, and when the self-government of the states shall have been so far lost as that of the departments of France, or even so closely limited as that of the counties of England, on that day the political career of the American people will have been robbed of its most interesting and valuable features, and the usefulness of this nation will be lamentably impaired." End of quote.